This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
I never get tired of listening to Roy Orbison. Good morning, and welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, and along with my buddy Big Ed Davis, we thank you for joining us on this Wednesday, October the 12th already. Wow, this is really Columbus Day, by the way. October the 12th, 1492, although they celebrated it on Monday. We are going to be talking in a few minutes with George Beebe of the Quincy Institute. He's also the former head of the CIA's Russian Analysis Division, and we're going to talk about his belief that we are now much closer to a military conflict with Russia. So stay tuned for that, just a few minutes. And did you hear about Tulsi Gabbard, the former Democratic primary presidential candidate, is leaving the Democrats behind? We are going to examine that decision. What's she going to do? And is the state of Oregon poised to elect its first Republican governor in 40 years? Could that be possible? Well, Joe Biden is going to hop on a plane and go out there and try to squelch that. I don't know how he's going to do anything good for them, but he's going to go out there. We're going to take a look. And in our ultimate top 10, if you listen to our last show, we gave you the top 10 cities that swear the most. That swear the most. Well, today it's going to be the top 10 cities that swear the least. All right? Let's find out if you're living in one of them. By the way, don't forget to listen to Senior Voice America. They come on before us. They're a great group. Tim Bryce and company. They are on, by the way, Monday through Friday. Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 a.m. here on the Great Tan Talk Radio Network. Well, a dear actress has passed away. Angela Lansbury. Everybody knows her. She's been around for a boy. She started back in 1945 in a movie called Gaslight. She won an Oscar. She died at the age of 96. Just 5 days shy of being 97, apparently. And, of course, you remember her from Murder, She Wrote. I think more people remember that than anything else. But she was also, I mean, she won 6 Golden Globes, 18 Emmys, an honorary Oscar for Life Achievement in Motion Pictures. She did just about everything. She was born in London. And I just thought I would mention it because, you know, it's one of the, again, another pioneer of the good old days of the golden age of movies, you might say, who has passed away. I said that she had won an Oscar. I think she was nominated for an Oscar for a movie called Gaslight, which was her first movie. I don't know if she actually won that Oscar or not. I have to check that up. But she did win 6 Golden Globes. Wow. An 18 Emmy nomination. That's pretty good. I'd say she had a very successful career. Angela Lansbury. In the meantime, back on the economic front, inflation, unfortunately, rose more than expected in September. The prices jumped 8.5%. 8.5%. It's getting worse. Where's Biden? By the way, why doesn't he take a news conference on what's going on in this country. Have you ever seen a more cowardly president when it comes to taking reporters' questions? I have never seen a person that is so afraid to face the public and answer a few questions. The Labor Department said today that its producer price index, which measures inflation at the wholesale level, rose about 0.4% in September. On an annual basis, that means prices went up about 8.5%. So things are just kind of floating around, are they not, in a bad way? Of course, we all know when we go to the store and try and buy eggs or, you know, turkeys are going to be, I don't remember, somebody told me, if you went and got like a decent-sized turkey for your family, you're going to spend like 8 times what you used to spend or something? Have you heard?
You know, they said that last year, and I didn't notice a great rise in prices, but it could be different this year. Now, I wanted to talk about that. You're talking about the grocery store.
Yeah.
I went the other day, and I'm telling you, the shelves look like, you know how it looks like before a hurricane's going to hit?
Yes.
Where they buy everything up? Everything was gone. Everything that you could, I mean, you couldn't, you had to make second and third choices of what you wanted.
It's kind of scary.
And then to top it all off, there were no checkouts, live checkouts. Yeah, it was all self-checkout. Walmart. And some of it, most of it was credit cards only.
Really?
Plastic only. And I believe that sooner or later, Walmart's going to go to all plastic.
Yeah, you may be right. Usually they have a couple of live people because...
There is nobody, Paul. I've never seen it before. Nobody. Yeah, and there were 10 people
interesting.
Deep. And this was like 6 o'clock at night. This is prime time for people, you know.
Yeah, that's very strange. Very strange. I can't remember when I've gone to a Walmart. Well, if you go real late at night, maybe. But it seems like they always have at least somebody available. Because you know there are people, especially older people, that don't like to use the automated, you know. I kind of like it, but I mean a lot of people
don't. I like it if I've got a few things.
Right. You'd rather, when you have a lot, you'd rather have
Right.
I got you.
I'd rather just have somebody else doing it and bagging it and put it in the cart and
I don't blame
it in the car. But
yeah.
I've never seen that before.
Well, the thing that does scare me the most is going in to get certain products, and they just aren't there. They just aren't there. And like you said, it's like somebody's doing a run on it just before some sort of a disaster, impending disaster. So,
and sometimes you see the crates in the middle of the aisle still boxed, you know, products still boxed up.
I have never seen this country in such a jeopardy in my life. That's why I think that this November election, which is only about 20-some days away now, is going to be a complete tsunami as far as positive Republican, negative Democrat.
And I've asked the managers, really like, what is the deal with employees? Why can't, said that they'll apply. They'll come in, they'll work 1 or 2 days and decide it's not for them.
Yeah.
I'm like, where are they getting their money then?
Some of them are still living off of some of the unemployment that they were getting, I suppose. I don't know.
Is it more feasible to be on unemployment than to go out and work?
No, and that
runs out
eventually.
I mean, they got $15 an hour.
It is right now a, what do you want to call it, an employee's market. In other words, lots of companies are looking for help. That we know. So maybe they think, you know, I'm going to take my time because I got a lot of companies that are interested, and I don't know. I don't know. It's right now, it's very, malaise was the word back in the Jimmy Carter presidency days. It's more than a malaise. It's like a deep fog right now. Anyway, let's take our break. When we come back, George Beebe of the Quincy Institute, as we talk about U.S., Russia, and a possible military collision.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on the Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets. From animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune in to the show on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Caregivers find the support they need on Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver. Heard every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m., Linda and her caring and knowledgeable guests will bring you education, information, and resources, as well as a shoulder for caregivers. That's Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver, where you can find help and hope every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back on Freedom Works and delighted to have back George Beebe. He is the director of Grand Strategy. That's a pretty interesting title. Grand Strategy at the Quincy Institute. He was actually a former head of the CIA's Russian Analysis Division, and we've brought him on to talk a little bit about the possibility that Russia and the United States are inching maybe closer to a military conflict. George, welcome to Freedom Works.
Thank you.
Well, it's kind of a scary thought, but we got, with all the things that are going on in the Ukraine right now, it doesn't seem like it's going well for Putin. They blow up that bridge, between Russia and Crimea and all that other stuff. And now he's raining missiles down on different parts of Ukraine in a sort of a revenge mode. You're saying that Russia's missile attack and bomb attack are a major escalation and bring the world closer to a direct military collision between us and Russia. Tell us a little bit, if you would, about that.
Well, I think we're in a situation here where this war has changed. It began as a rather limited effort to try to prevent the Russians from resubjugating Ukraine. And our ambitions have changed. And we're now looking at this as a war that we're unwilling to lose. And the Russians are very much in the same mode. They're unwilling to lose this either. And it's become a proxy war between the United States and Russia. And when you have the world's two largest nuclear powers that are fighting a war in which neither side is willing to lose, and right now it looks like neither side's willing to compromise, that means you're on a collision course toward a direct military confrontation. And that inevitably raises the question of whether nuclear weapons might be used. So we're in an extremely dangerous situation right now, and I don't think our government is leveling with the American people about the dangers that we face.
Yeah. Well, now, didn't President Biden go before some fundraising group and talk about Armageddon with Russia?
He did, which is interesting in that he chose a private dinner with Democratic Party donors is a forum in which to raise this danger. This is the kind of thing that American voters need to understand. And we need to be making some fundamental decisions about how do we ensure American national security in this situation.
One of the things, George, that I'm a little bit, I guess, puzzled on, and maybe a lot of people are, is exactly what is the Biden war strategy for the Ukraine? I'm not sure anybody knows. I'm not sure that they've actually developed and figured out a complete philosophy on what to do in this war.
Well, I think that's right. I think we know clearly what we don't want to see happen. We don't want to see the Russians win. But we don't seem to have a plan for how we bring this war to a safe an effective conclusion. In other words, we don't have an exit strategy. This is not the first time in American history that we've gone into a war without that kind of a plan, but one would think we would have learned our lessons from the past. Instead, we seem to be repeating a lot of the old errors that we've made here.
Yeah, indeed. You know, it just seems like the Biden administration is doing everything half-baked. Let's look at the way they got out of Afghanistan. Everybody who had, I think an honest look at that would say that we absolutely looked like we didn't know what we were doing as we left. Then when it comes to the Ukraine, Putin was banging the war drum to invade Ukraine for a long time. When we were all talking about it, and even Biden was talking about it, warning what would happen, And then he does. He goes ahead and he invades. And then we go into this thing about whether or not we should have shipped certain kinds of planes over there. I just got the impression that we want to dip our toe in there, but we don't want to jump in when it comes to this war. And I don't know, if we really know what we want to do.
Well, I think that's right. And to extend your analogy, we started out by dipping our toe in this war, but we're now well past the waist and headed toward the chest and the neck. Not something that you ought to be doing without a plan.
So whether we want to or not, the water is rising.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely right.
All right.
We're in deep waters right now.
So the saber rattling by Putin has been going on. He's used the word alluded to, using a nuclear weapon if necessary. Then you read that Putin may be in deep trouble, even with his own people and the people around him in the Kremlin, because the war is not going well. And you see all of these, these men that he wants to recruit for the war heading for the exits in the border. So things are not going well. He seems like he's almost like a cornered animal, And you worry about that. And so I can understand your feeling. Is that... what should we do? What do you think we should do at this stage?
Well, Biden warned that we were in the most dangerous moment we've been in since the Cuban Missile Crisis, and I think that's actually true. Kennedy came out of that crisis and drew a great lesson from it. He said that that crisis shows that the leaders of nuclear superpowers should not put each other in a position where they face a choice between humiliation and using nuclear weapons. And unfortunately, that's the direction we're heading. We're looking at Russia's struggles on the battlefield in Ukraine. We're looking at growing political instability in Russia and applauding and thinking, this is great, we're winning. But what, in fact, is going on here is Putin is getting closer and closer to being in exactly the position that Kennedy warned against, where he's going to face a desperate choice between humiliation, which would probably involve Russia's breakup in some way. In other words, he thinks that Russia's survival is at stake here, or resorting to the use of nuclear weapons, which might give him some hope, a desperate, very dangerous hope that there might be an alternative to that. It's very much not in our interest to put him in that situation. And that means that we need to be talking. What Kennedy did during the Cuban Missile Crisis was he opened up a back-channel dialogue through his brother Bobby with the Soviet ambassador in Washington. And that proved the key to finding a way out. That's what we're going to have to do today. We're going to have to find a compromise exit. And the longer we wait, the more difficult it's going to be to do that. So we need to be doing that urgently.
So we're not doing any back channel talking, in your opinion, at this point. We're just letting that go. There's nobody in the Biden administration that's over there sitting down with people around Putin or himself, Putin, and talking.
Well, I don't know the answer to that. I think if it were truly going on in secret, none of us would know the answer to that. All that said, the external shapes of what's going on right now, what you can see happening on the outside, very much causes me to doubt that anything like that is going on right now.
We're talking with George Beebe. He is the Director of Grand Strategy at the Quincy Institute. He's a former director of the CIA Russia Analysis Team, former advisor to Dick Cheney on Russian affairs. So he's got a lot of... His resume is pretty strong when it comes to these things. And, Biden seems to, on the one hand, He seems to be, you know, he's shaking his fist at Putin. And at one point, I think he said something about he has to be taken out. And then, of course, his team had to come out and clean up that mess. So you don't know. I first of all, I don't know that Biden is even running the store anymore. I think there are some people that are behind the throne that are running it. Don't even know for sure who they are. But we don't know who's running the store. We don't know what the strategy is. China is watching things. I think we want to show China that we're not afraid to intervene if necessary, and we're doing that because we want China to keep their hands off Taiwan. I mean, there's all kinds of, you know, little subplots going on, George.
No, that's exactly right. It's a very complex situation with a lot of variables. Unfortunately, all of those variables that you're mentioning make this more dangerous rather than less. A lot of things could happen, small things that could happen, accidents, unexpected developments that could put this situation on an even more dangerous trajectory than it is right now. So all of that, I think, should cause us to be a lot more cautious than we are. Instead, we're not being cautious, quite honestly. We're trying to figure out how close to that red line we can tiptoe without walking over it.
Right.
And given the stakes that are involved here, that's quite a dangerous approach to this situation. And one, frankly, that if the American people understood, I doubt that they would support.
Mm-hmm. Another factor is the other countries that are in Europe, in fact, the NATO countries, their involvement, their, doing things. I mean, it's going to affect them a lot sooner than it's going to affect the United States. And I remember, you know, when Trump would say, you know, NATO has to invest more, blah, blah, blah. The United States is, you know, paying a large percentage of everything going on. I don't know. It just, do you think that the NATO countries need to become more involved in this war?
Well, if you look at who is providing aid to Ukraine, both military and aid and economic aid, the amount that the United States is providing dwarfs that coming from Europe. It's twice as large as all the European allies' contributions put together. So is Europe pulling its weight in all of this? The numbers say not even close.
Right. Exactly. Do you think Biden should be tweaking them a little bit more? I think if Trump was president, he would be. But then again, I think if Trump was president, this wouldn't have happened in the first place. I honestly believe that Putin would not have invaded the Ukraine. But that's something, you know, that's now in the past. But does Biden and the Biden administration need to take, you know, some of these NATO countries, say, come on now, let's become a little bit more involved here. Let's show some sort of cohesion, which would perhaps, you know, Putin would see as, just a firmer stance against him, and maybe bring this Ukraine situation to some sort of a conclusion.
Well, the Biden administration has not focused on that. What they've focused on is making sure that the Russians can't drive wedges between NATO allies. So they're really focused not on pressuring the other NATO allies, but rather making sure that we are all pointed in the same direction. How successful that is going to be moving forward remains to be seen. The European economies are going to come under some tremendous pressure. It's growing quite significantly, largely as a result of their loss of Russian energy supplies. It's already having a profound effect on the German economy and others. And if this is a cold winter, it could have actually a devastating effect there. And so, you know, whether the Europeans become as enthusiastic about the war in the wake of that or not, we'll have to see.
Getting back, George, to your point that we're closer than ever with a military conflict. I mean, quite honestly, do you think we are willing to take that step? Do you think Putin is willing to risk that step? I mean, How do you see a scenario like that even occurring? I mean, we would, I mean, would Putin decide to, send a missile towards one of our ships? Or, how do you see that unfolding if it were to occur?
Yeah, the problem with this is that when you're in an escalation spiral, which we're in right now, each step in that escalation has a logic of its own. And you don't early on face some sort of rational choice between, hey, do we want a nuclear war or not? When you put it that way, the answer is no. The Russians, of course, don't want to have a nuclear war. Neither do we. We recognize the implications of that. It would be insanity to make a decision like that. But that's not how this would happen. It would be step-by-step escalation in which each escalatory step seemed like it was necessary. And the calculation at each step up the ladder is that once I take this step, the other side will sober up. They will realize that it makes no sense to go any further, and they'll essentially say, hey, let's talk.
Right.
We'll concede. What has happened so far is at each stage in this escalating war, the other side has not said, hey, let's talk. They have escalated in return. The Russians have escalated over the past couple of weeks. We're seeing that play out right now. What is the United States going to do? Well, it's clear already. We're responding. We're retaliating. We're saying, okay, we'll see your airstrikes and we'll raise you with new air defense that we will provide to Ukraine.
Yeah.
The Russians are going to respond to that in turn. And we could reach a point where the Russians say, hey, look, all of this gee whiz weaponry that you're providing to the Ukrainians that is so effective on the battlefield has an Achilles heel, and that is space. It all depends on satellites. And your satellites are vulnerable, and we've been nice to this point. We haven't gone after those satellites. It would have huge implications.
Oh, yeah.
But we can't continue to tolerate this.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if they take out space-based assets? What do we do? Things start to get very serious there, and you start facing some very difficult decisions about where this goes, and you start to lose control over this, and escalation begins to impose its own logic on things.
Okay. One other final thing. The other soap opera going on is whether or not the Politburo, or whatever the group is that surrounds Putin, is going to say at some point, this thing has turned into a complete mess, a nightmare. We want to get out, and maybe even dethrone Putin. Is there any is there any possibility that they would actually oust Putin and then say, look, we're pulling out. Putin's going to be gone. We're pulling back. Any chance of that?
Well, I would say yes and no. Actually, the chances that someone might say Putin has been ineffective and incompetent in how he has managed this war and needs to be replaced are growing. But the chances that whoever replaces him would say, and, let's make a deal with the West and pull out, are very slim. If Putin gets replaced, it's more likely to be nationalist patriots that think he has been too reluctant to get tough, too incompetent in the decisions that he's made, and that they will approach this war in a more effective way, more likely to bring victory than Putin.
So we want to
and
keep
we could find ourselves with an even bigger problem.
So you think they'd be more aggressive, not less aggressive?
Yes. Well,
okay.
That's
a scary
Putin
scenario.
On the political spectrum in Russia is considered to be too moderate, too centrist, too unwilling to
really
use Russia's military might effectively. He's getting hammered from his political right.
Boy, I hate to see the guy that would replace him if that's true. George, it was a pleasure talking with you. Very, very interesting. I look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. George Beebe, Quincy Institute. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Tulsi Gabbard. She's no longer a Democrat. She ran in the Democratic primary to become the presidential candidate. Now she's leaving the whole damn party. We're going to talk about it.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, this is Steve Vaccaro, psychologist and host of the Chapters Wrap Live. Each live show will bring on top-notch guests from the nonprofit world. We are the advocacy show that provides a platform for other advocates. So please tune in on your drive home from work to share your voice. The Chapters Wrap, where unity and diversity meet one chapter at a time.
Listen to Kicking Unhealthy Relationships to the Curb at 5, Voices for Change at 6, Reach Out with Ray and Steve at 7, and the Chapters Wrap at 8, Wednesdays, here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
What's the buzz in Tampa Bay? Senior Voice America Radio, a unique morning variety program delivering the latest commentary on politics by host and political analyst Tim Bryce and the up-to-minute happenings of Wall Street. Beyond politics and finance, they scale the scholar's rampart by including topics on religion and nutrition with thought-provoking guests and interviews. Tune in every weekday from 8 to 10 a.m. on this Tan Talk station. Senior Voice America, serving our nation's seasoned citizens for over four decades.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
We are back on a Wednesday, and we thank you so very much for being with us here on Freedom Works. So Tulsi Gabbard, you know, she always seemed conservative, even when she was running for the presidential primary Democratic nomination. I just got that impression. She has a background in military. She's from Hawaii. She announced, I guess she was on Twitter or something like that, that she has left the Democratic Party, denouncing it as an elitist cabal. Now, she left Congress last year, and I guess she attacked Democrats in a nearly 30-minute video. Okay, it was on YouTube. Now, she did not say she's going to join the Republican Party or adopt any other political party or affiliation at this point. She says, I can no longer remain in today's Democratic Party that is now under the complete control of an elitist cabal of warmongers driven by cowardly wokeness who divide us by racializing every issue and stoke anti-white racism.
That wraps it up.
I think it does. So if you're looking for a reason to leave, I think she kind of spelled it
maybe
out right there, didn't
maybe
she?
Maybe we do a little trade. Maybe we trade her for Mitt Romney. Or, you know,
yeah.
We do a swap.
I think
you guys take
she's a lot more conservative than he is. That's for sure.
He's always screwing things up anyway.
Yeah.
Still bitter and he can get
now,
president.
She went on to say, and call on other moderate Democrats to follow. You know, remember we've talked about our friend from West Virginia, Joe Manchin, and I always thought that if anybody was going to bolt and become, leave the Democratic Party for the Republican Party, it would have been him.
Actually, he's a professional. He plays the fence just right.
Yeah.
He's not too far on the right, not too far on the left, where he can keep his voters.
Right.
And still keep his party. So I think he's professional at it. Probably one of the best ones out there.
Why does he want to stay in the Democratic Party? West Virginia's a conservative state. Coal mining and the whole bit. They really are. I mean, if he announced...
Keeps him elected.
But if he announced today... by the way, I'm changing to a Republican. You think he wouldn't be... He would be reelected. He certainly would be reelected there, I think. Now, I know he's got certain ties to the Democrats and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, so it's Tulsi Gabbard that jumps the fence instead of straddling it. What else did she say? Oh, she said, I believe in a government that is of the people, by the people, and for the people. Unfortunately, today's Democratic Party does not. Instead, it stands for a government that is of, by, and for the powerful elite. I'm calling on my fellow common sense, independent-minded Democrats to join me in leaving the Democratic Party. I'll tell you where she's going to show up at. She's going to be on Fox News a lot now.
Oh, yeah.
And she'll be one of those contributing people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure, you know, she's either got a book out or will have a book out. You know that.
Well, you have to.
You're going to be having, there's money to be made.
Let's
be honest about it.
That's what it's all about.
But I've always kind of, you know, even when she was running for the presidential nomination, I could see that nobody wanted to... It was almost like she was off of the corner by herself, you know, during that whole thing. Nobody wanted to deal with her. They didn't want to deal with her. I think they were uncomfortable with what she was saying.
Mm.
So I give her credit, actually. I really do. Now, can't think of a better thing for the Democrats. Here we got the state of Oregon. For 40 years, it's been a Democratic state with a Democratic governor. Did you know that it is on the it's poised to become a Republican-governed state? And this will be for the first time, as I said, in 40 years. But our buddy President Biden is riding to the rescue. He heads to the Beaver State later this week. And I'm sure he's going to turn those voters around. He's such a persuasive, charismatic man that when he gets out there, I'm sure all of the Oregonians are going to see the light and make sure that they stay in the Democratic fold. Correct?
I don't know if he's the guy you really want out in public right now.
No? For one thing, we send Fetterman?
One thing, he forgets where he's at. And then he forgets who's actually alive and not alive.
Uh-huh.
Calling them out. And stuff like that.
Well, when he gets out to Oregon, you know, isn't that lumberjack territory? He can call on Paul Bunyan. Maybe Paul Bunyan will be in the audience.
Tell you what, let me ask you something. If right now Joe Biden walked through that door, would you shake his hand? And what would you say to him?
The truth is, yes, I would, because I would want to get him in here on a microphone. That's why I would shake his hand and be nice to him. And sit him down in the studio and devote the rest of the show. And maybe...
No questions.
Oh, no.
No questions.
No. If that guy walks into the studio...
No questions.
I'll drag him in here. I mean, if he walks into our station, I drag him into the studio, even if I have to tie him up. The only thing that won't be tied up is his mouth, because I want to hear what he has to say.
I think I'd shake his hand, maybe, or maybe a fist bump. Or an elbow bump, whatever he was doing.
Right.
And that's probably about it. And probably less would be more in that situation.
As we alluded to, this guy has been in fear of any kind of questions from reporters. I think he did another sit-down with somebody.
CNN. It was with Jake Tapper last night.
Did you happen to see any of
it? God, no.
I'm sure they were nothing but ice cream softballs.
Oh, they were. The only thing was the Hunter Biden. There was one question about Hunter Biden, but it was about the taxes and the gun charge. And first Biden said, I don't know nothing about the gun charge. And then he explained the whole gun situation. You don't know anything about it, then why did you just explain it?
Everybody knows he's lying about Hunter Biden. Everybody.
And that was it.
Jake Tapper knows it.
There were no border questions.
Everybody knows that he's lying about not knowing about what his son was doing.
If I could ask him a question...
We got pictures of him
with
people from the Burisma Energy Group and Biden in a golf... in a golf setting. Everybody knows.
But
why does the press let them get away with it?
Well, because it keeps them in the pool. I mean, you can't... Listen,
because
you can't,
they're on his
you can't
team.
Be in that... You can't... I know. You can't be in that pool of reporters and just go rogue. You can't do that. Or you just find yourself out of that loop and then you're out of a job.
Right.
You know, and if you're working for an entity that is definitely on the right side, or I'm sorry, on the left side of everything, then you have to be on that side too. You have to, that's right, let's go left, yes. You can't be out there sticking up for the right at all, otherwise you're going to find yourself on Fox.
Well, here's another scenario about Hunter Biden. Democrats realizing that the Republicans are about to take the Congress and I think more than likely the Senate and start hearings on the Hunter Biden scandal and the laptop. Yeah. They would rather, if they can catch him on some sort of a violation where they can cut off any further scrutiny of Hunter Biden, they're going to try to do it.
Look, I treat
Before January.
I've
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
And now all of a sudden, okay, we've already made a decision. Okay, we've decided to sentence him. We're going to slap his hand. Now you can't go any further.
I've said it all along with Trump and the left charging him or going after him for this, and we've got proof of this and proof of that, and nothing shows up. Excuse me. I'm the same way with the Hunter Biden thing. Listen, I've heard enough about it. Show me the proof. If it's there, let's see it. What are you waiting on? If this guy has enough damning evidence on a copy of that hard drive, well, then release it. What are you waiting on?
They already know. He openly talks about funneling money to his
father.
But
we got an athlete or a head coach that's caught in a bar, the married guy, feeling up on some honey, and the next day it's on YouTube. And the guy is fired two days later.
That gets covered.
Why is this any different?
Oh, it's worse.
Why is this any different? Do you think these guys are going to come out and take you out because you're working against the United States president?
I tell you what, I
don't understand it.
The whole thing is surreal. It really is. We're going to take our final break, and when we come back, we are going to, among other things, we're going to talk a little sports and also the top 10 cities that swear the least.
Jesse is a friend. Yeah, I know he's been a good friend of mine. But lately something's changed. It ain't hard to define. Jesse's got himself a girl and I want to make her mine.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's Tantalk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
Hey, you new to the area or just want to know about the best hidden gems and upcoming events? Stay tuned. Be Local Buzz with Devin takes you to these places, introduces you to the best businesses, and tells you about upcoming buzz. Preset your radio to Tan Talk 1340 AM or 106.1 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. That is the Be Local Buzz with Devin on Tan Talk 1340 AM and 106 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. Looking forward to speaking with you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We're back to the final segment of Freedom Works. By the way, we're here Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Tantalk Radio Network, and we're delighted that you can listen in. If you can't listen live, thanks to Big Ed, all our shows are on tape, on podcast. All you got to do is go to our website, OurFreedomWorks.com. That's O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com. Click on the podcast button. Ed's got all the shows. You'll see who the guest is, and the top 10. He'll have the most recent shows at the top. You can scroll on down. You want to see some of the earlier shows. God love them. OurFreedomWorks.com. Okay, now, the Biden administration, you know, we're trying to keep people employed. We're trying to make it attractive for people. We're trying to keep our economy running, right? So what does the Biden administration do? They've proposed a new rule that would reclassify millions of what are called gig workers. Those are independent contractors. That'll do a gig, I guess. Mm-hmm. Okay. He wants to reclassify them as employees. So therefore, they would get, and the companies would have to give them employee benefits, right?
Mm-hmm.
And pay Social Security tax on them,
mm-hmm.
and give them health insurance, mm-hmm. and, you know, all that kind of thing. Now, you do that, you raise the cost of the labor, mm-hmm. obviously, for the company, which means you're going to raise the cost of the product because you got to be able to pay these employees and therefore keep your doors open.
So in other words, you're saying get rid of the 1099?
I'm saying
Is that what that is?
That's what the Biden administration seems to want to be able to do. Get rid of the 1099ers.
It's hard for one guy that comes in once a year.
Don't we want to keep prices low and keep these companies functioning? Don't we also want some sort of a freedom? If somebody comes into my company and says, look, I'm willing to work for you. You don't have to give me any benefits. I'll work part-time. Mm-hmm. I just want you to pay me for the hours that I work. And I say, great, let's do it. We make an arrangement. Why should the federal government intercede?
Because they're not getting any part of it.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line.
Well, that's not
okay.
That's not right. That's not fair. That's cheating. And they do get a part of it, even if they have a 1099 employee.
Yes, but they want more.
They want more. That's right. What it is. So, yesterday, the Labor Department unveiled a new proposal making it more difficult for companies to classify their workers as independent contractors. You know, delivery people, mm-hmm. Uber drivers, whatever it is. You can just think of all kinds, you know, home care workers. I mean, there's all kinds of things that would be affected by this. And a lot of these people that are independent contractors, let's face it, they would lose the opportunity to work.
Yeah, I mean...
I mean, think of all the bad things.
Right, my friend is an independent contractor. He's a DJ, does weddings. I used to do weddings. I used to do... places here and there for a weekend or whatever, once or twice a year. And you would have to be put on their payroll to do that. And
right.
This would be, I have to talk to my friend Rick about how this would affect him.
It'd be a mess.
Yeah.
I mean, do you hire him and then when it's over, you fire him? I mean, how does that work? It's a bureaucratic nightmare, too. And it just doesn't make any sense. The final rule on this is expected to come next year. Well, let's hope. If we have a Republican Congress, it ain't ever going to see the light of day. All right. Now, I was privileged to be at the sports bar last night, Ed.
Yeah.
And guess what? The inaugural NHL game, the Lightning, went to the New York Rangers. Yeah. Did you watch any of the game?
No. Well, I did watch, but real quickly, we were talking about just before the break, that this happened to me in 2003, Keyshawn Johnson, who was a member of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, there was rumors that he was a cancer in the locker room. I was there after a game late, had my tape recorder rolling, didn't realize it as I was waiting on some other players. Keyshawn Johnson was having a discussion with another player. I got home as I was pulling the audio off the tape. I found this conversation that Keyshawn was having with another player, actually degrading John Gruden, the then head coach, calling him names, doesn't know what he's doing, blah, 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 blah. Instead of me hanging on to that and going, say, hey, Keyshawn, I could release this. You know, I got this here. I sent it out to the media, the rest of the guys. Is, hey, guys, you got a list of this. It is true. 2 days later, he was deactivated. Third day, he was cut from the team.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saying on the Hunter Biden thing, if it's there, what are you waiting on?
Right. I agree with you.
If Joe Biden is guilty of doing these things, well, let's get it out there.
Well, here's what we're waiting on. We got an executive department under President Joe Biden, the father. That's why. And Merrick Garland, the attorney general. Are you kidding me? The thing that we need to do to resolve this is to get an independent prosecutor that is fully independent of the Justice Department and have him look into it. That's what we really need to do. But they don't want to do that. Okay. So anyway, I just wanted to let you know that I watched a portion of the game. I was doing some
of it.
And unfortunately, our beloved Lightning lost.
Yeah.
But the season has begun. Are we hopeful that they will be good to make the playoffs?
My friend Rick also, I noticed he put something. He's all up in arms. He said they were little. He think, oh, it's going to be a horrible season. They look slow. I'm like, Rick, come on, it's one game. Jeez, come on. They were in New York. You know, it's opening night. Did you happen to hear the just before the puck drop with the official?
No.
He has his mic on and he says before he drops puck, he says. He says, where else would you want to be right now? This is great, blah, blah, opening night. Here we go, blap. And then after they were skating and stuff, and there was a break. I think it was Victor Hedman, Lightning guy, goes up, what the heck was that? And the official, he goes, oh, that was for TV. They wanted me to do that this year.
You talk about a referee.
Yes, the referee turned his mic on and said, where else would you want to be right now than opening night in the NHL? And then he drops the puck. Victor Hedman goes, I think we got something to negotiate in the next player's contracts or something like that. So
okay. Well, anyway, we're off and running, and we got the baseball playoffs going, and, of course, we got football going. We got a lot of sports going on right now, just about every sport. Basketball is going to be starting.
Yeah.
You know, October's an interesting month with everything going on in sports, so we'll be talking a lot of that. Anyway, Ed, it's time for our top 10, and I want to see how good your memory is, Ed.
Okay.
We're going to do the top 10 cities that swear the least, okay? And you remember on Monday that we did the top 10 that swear the most. Do you recall what was the city that was number one swearing the most?
It was Midwest. Oh, yeah. It was Ohio.
Yeah.
It was a little town in Ohio. Well, not a little town.
You're right. Can you remember it?
No.
What day is it officially today?
Wednesday.
Think.
Huh?
Today, October the 12th.
What about it? I don't know.
What day? What did we celebrate Monday?
Columbus, Ohio.
Columbus,
okay,
Ohio.
No, it was, you mean Indigenous.
Now
Indigenous
you get it.
Ohio.
Now you
there
get
you
it.
Go.
Okay. All right. So anyway, the top 10 cities to swear the least. This comes from an organization called Preply. They surveyed over 1,500 people living in the 30 largest cities. I don't know how they ever came up with it. But here we go. Well, there's a tie, okay? A three-way tie. So it's number 7. And swearing at the average of 20 times, only 20 times a day, are San Antonio, Texas, Nashville, Tennessee, and Denver, Colorado. Apparently 20 is not a lot.
No.
I guess it's not. Okay. And now we have a tie for number 6. Charlotte, North Carolina, and San Diego, both...
Geez, I don't think everybody's usually happy in North Carolina.
Well, they are, because they only swear 19 times a day, and the same thing in San Diego. Okay, and now we have a tie for number 5, four-way. Four-way tie for number 5. These cities swear at 18 curses, I guess, or whatever, on average per day, and that is Detroit, Seattle, Houston, and Memphis.
Hmm.
And I can't see any relationship there, so I don't know what to tell you about that. Okay. And now we have a tie for 4. And swearing in at 17 times a day are New York, which surprises me. They're very low. El Paso, Texas, and Chicago. They're all 17 swears per day. All right. Let's see. Where are we here? All right, number 3. San Jose, California. That's a techie city. And they swear 16 times a day. Tie for number 2. Milwaukee and Boston.
Really?
Yeah,
Boston?
Boston. Now, don't you think that they'd swear a lot more in Boston? Yeah. But only 15 times on average.
Pack that damn calf.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, we have a tie for number 1. I'm going to give you a hint, Ed.
Right.
It's a tie. 2 cities, and both of them are out west.
Can't be California.
You're right.
Okay. So, about Washington?
No.
No?
We talked about this particular city earlier in the show.
Mm.
And Biden's going to show up there.
Oh, God. All right.
Okay. It's Portland.
Portland, yes.
And Phoenix.
Wow.
Portland and Phoenix are the least swearing cities at 14 average swears per day.
Hmm.
So there you go. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the water.
It could be.
Who knows? Anyway, thank you so very much for listening to us. We will be back on Friday, God willing. Please be safe and remember that freedom works.
I gave a girl a ride in the wagon. She cried.